I'm Dr. Leif Tappanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History. I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho. This is The Nature of Idaho. Coming from the 1B, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of.
I'm Peter, and before we start, we've got a little bit of nature news for you. Did you guys know that wombat poop is cubed? It's the only animal in the entire world with cube-shaped poop. Wombats use their poo as a way to communicate and mark their territory, and that cube shape helps keep those piles together. How do they do this? Do you know, Leif?
I have no idea, but you're about to tell me.
I am going to give you an answer. So as wombats are busy digesting and excreting, their feces change from liquid-like to solid in the last 25% of their intestines. The magic happens at the last 8%.
Ooh.
Yes.
What happens?
Their intestines is quite flexible and more elastic than any of our intestines or any other animals. And somewhere along the line, they start shaping their poo into cubes, which is really pretty cool. I'm not sure how practical it is for us, but it works wonders for wombats.
And they stack these? They stack their poo?
They stack their poo. So as they're marking their territory, they need to have – it's kind of like a road sign. And they just stack their poo on top of each other and, you know, like dice. If you're going to stack dice, this is what wombat poo looks like.
That's pretty amazing. I'm glad you found out about all of this and I didn't have to do the research.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Again, I'm from Zoo, Idaho, so poo is my business, Leif.
That's great. I have nothing to add on that one.
Thank goodness. Good.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, you know, one of the things that we like to do on this show is ask a few questions of our listeners. And so it's trivia time.
Excellent.
The big theme for today is bats. And we've got a little question for you. This is one that's a good noodle scratcher. So how much in dollars do scientists estimate bats save farmers each year in reduced crop damage and pesticide use?
You know, that's a great question, Leif. And today's guest is Dr. Rita Dixon. She is our State Wildlife Action Plan Coordinator for Idaho Department of Fish and Game. Today, we're going to be talking about bats. And there you go. The post lead-in to the trivia question is Dr. Rita and our bat conversation. First, though, we need to take a real quick break, and when we get back, we will be discussing bats.
KISU works hard to ensure the reliability of our FM signal, but occasionally, seasonal weather or equipment failures cause us to go off the air. Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org, or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Welcome back. With us today is Dr. Rita Dixon. Again, she is our State Wildlife Action Plan Coordinator for the Idaho Department of Fish and Game. Rita, very first question. Why do you love bats? Why are they so important?
Well, it's a simple answer in terms of why I love bats. They're intelligent, communicative, they're curious about their world, and they're just fascinating animals. What a lot of people probably have no idea that bats do is they purr just like cats when they're content. Their whole little body shakes and they're like that.
Wait. So, Rita, can you hear them when they're purring if you are holding
yes.
a bat? Really?
Yes. If you have a bat, its body's vibrating. If you pull your ear close to it, you can actually hear purring just like a cat purrs in your lap.
So do you actually, you know, kind of like pet on the backside of the head and the back for them? Is it kind of similar with cats where it's a behavior with the mom and the nursing and the comforting?
It's more of, it seems to be when they feel secure and they're warm and they're safe. And I rehabilitate bats, and that's why I know this, because I'm in close contact with them often. And so somebody working with bats in the wild is probably not going to notice that, because they're netting them, and bats are really stressed out when they're in the net and things like that. So they're not likely to hear that, have them purring.
And see, part of my career in zoos, I've worked with African straw-colored bats, and when we do their wellness checks, we never heard purrs.
Well, it may depend on species, too, but in my experience in Idaho with the bats that we have here, of all the ones that have come into rehab, I've seen this in all the species I've rehabilitated.
Well, now, so bats are little, and we know that around here. I think I've seen a few bats flying, you know, in twilight. Maybe you can see them flitting around. But I personally don't have a whole lot of awareness of, you know, how many bats are there in Idaho? Are there a lot of different kinds of bats? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, and one thing that is interesting when people call about bats, two of the most common things I get about bats in Idaho are people assume that we have fruit bats. We don't. They also think we have vampire bats. We don't. And they think every bat they find is a baby bat, because they're always so surprised at how small bats really are, because they're used to seeing, you know, images of fruit bats with 6-foot wingspan. And our bats, all 14 bat species that regularly occur in Idaho, you could take any one of them and put in a first-class envelope with a first-class stamp, and that's how small they are and how little they weigh.
Wow. Are they active all through the year? Could you see them in the winter? What do they do? It's cold out right now.
It's really cold out right now. And so bats basically have two strategies for surviving winter in temperate latitudes like Idaho. So they either hibernate or migrate. And we have two species that migrate out of state, the hoary bat and silver-haired bat. Although the silver-haired bat, there are some that actually stay. We have records of some that hibernate, and we actually had some silver-haired turn up this week. Our temperatures in Boise came up to about 40 degrees, and so some bats will come out if the weather warms up a little bit, and then they will go back into hibernation. But typically, our bats are hibernating through the winter months, generally from mid to late October until mid to late March.
And so, Rita, why are our bats hibernating? You know, when you've got some, when you go down into, you know, the further south and you don't have these temperature extremes, they're not hibernating during the seasons. Why are our guys hibernating?
They're hibernating because they're of food availability. The insect, they're not able to find the food that they need to survive for the winter. And bats can regulate their temperature, and what they do is their temperature pretty much can go down to ambient. And so they find places that have stable temperatures and humidity to survive the winter without food. So they're really packing on weight going into hibernation, because they need that brown adipose fat to get through the winter so that they have enough energy. And so that's why it's really critical when we have what we call hibernacula, where bats winter, that bats don't get disturbed, because if they have to wake up too many times, that can be the difference of surviving or dying.
So that brings up a very interesting and devastating disease, in a sense, that's working its way out west, and that's white nose syndrome. When I got here 4.5 years ago, I found out there wasn't a lot of people in Idaho who were aware of what white nose syndrome really is and how devastating it can be to a bat population. Can you explain a little bit about white nose?
Yes. Bat white nose syndrome is a deadly disease that affects North American bats and is caused by the cold-loving fungus called Pseudogymnoascus destructens. What it does is it alters the bat's hibernating behavior, the bat's physiology and immune function, which can result in increased frequency of arousals from hibernation and cause mortality by depleting critical fat reserves, like we already talked about, as well as disrupt the water balance or physiology of the bat. And so although bats do arouse during hibernation a certain number of times, being infected with the fungus, white nose syndrome, it can cause them to arouse too many times, and that can cause the mortality.
So are you suggesting that the white nose fungus, it's not from here, it's coming here to the West, and how is that happening?
So originally it was introduced into a cave in New York State, we believe, from a visitor from someplace in Europe on their clothing, gear, footwear, we're not really sure. That's the most plausible explanation of how it got here. It is not native to North America, which is why it's had such a devastating impact on bat populations in North America. And since it was first discovered in the winter of 2006-2007, it's continued to spread rapidly across the continent. And with respect to Idaho, we've been doing active surveillance for several years in Idaho statewide. And to date, we have not detected the fungus, thank goodness. But it has been confirmed in Washington State. And just last year, the fungus that causes the disease was detected in southeast Wyoming.
What can we do as citizens to help slow down that spread of the fungus?
One of the most important things that Idaho citizens can do is, one, stay out of the places that bats hibernate. Don't disturb the bats during the winter. It is critical for them. And also, if you're a caver, for example, or a recreationist, make sure that you follow national decontamination protocols and decontaminate your gear between sites within Idaho. If you've caved any place outside of Idaho, we do not want you bringing any gear, clothing, or footwear into the state, because that puts our bats at risk.
Excellent. And people, as they start moving around and seeing some of these caves, they're going to see these gates across the front of the caves. And they're to keep people out and still have room for the bats to fly out. So there's another form of protection, or at least a way to limit people's access to caves.
Right, but there are many caves that aren't gated. And so in those situations, then we rely on people to be responsible when they're recreating.
What's the mortality rate when white nose gets into a hibernaculum?
It depends on the species, but what we've seen where white nose is endemic, primarily, you know, in some of the eastern states in particular, we've seen population declines of 90 to 100%. It's
wow.
Devastating to bats. And in Idaho, some of our bat species are known to be impacted by white nose syndrome elsewhere in the country. So we're extremely concerned about the health of our bats, and we want to do everything we can to protect them.
Well, that's unbelievable how devastating that can be to a population. I'm curious how bats' ecology, how do they operate within the natural system? What's their role? Are they helpful in any way to humans beyond, you know, their own beauty and natural natural interest point? I mean, are they helpful?
They're incredibly helpful. They're so important to human health, the environment, and our economy. And so, for example, because bats are in our bats, all of our bats in Idaho are insectivorous. So they prey on insects, some insects that cause human disease. For example, mosquitoes that can cause West Nile virus, for example. So they protect our human health. In the Northeast, where white nose has hit so hard and caused such declines, they have now seen a direct link between the loss of bats and increased pesticides on crops, and they've correlated that with an increase in infant mortality. So, you know, if we lose bats, that means we have to put more pesticides on our food, which is not healthy for us or our environment. That's not a good thing. They're also prey on insects that damage our forests. And in a state like Idaho that, you know, has a lot of forested lands and it's important to the environment and our economy, the bats are contributing to that.
You know, we just talked about white nose and how important bats are to our economy, our ecology, and the state of Idaho. Are there any other types of pressures on bat conservation right now that we need to be aware of and start looking into?
Yes, prior to 2000, intentional killing by humans caused the greatest mortality of bats worldwide. Then, with the advent of the introduction of white nose syndrome, as well as the global increase of industrial wind power facilities, now collisions with wind turbines and white nose syndrome are the leading causes of mortality in bats. And so we have, like I mentioned, our migratory bats. Large numbers of migratory bats are killed every year at wind energy facilities through direct strikes with the wind turbines. And those in Idaho are the hoary bat and silver-haired bat. So wind energy and white nose syndrome right now in Idaho are our biggest conservation concerns for bats.
Is there anything that our local and state power companies can do with the wind turbines to kind of help reduce or even possibly eliminate these strikes?
Well, one of the things we're working on right now within the Idaho Bat Working Group is we have a sub-working group to address the impacts of wind energy. And we're working with our partners, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Bureau of Land Management, and others, to try to come up with some strategies that we could implement here in Idaho. And some of the things that have been shown to decrease fatality is changing the cut-in speed for when the wind turbines kick in. And so one of the challenges we face in Idaho as a state agency, which is largely true for many states, is we don't have regulatory authority over wind energy here. So we can make recommendations and we can try to work with companies to do, you know, positive actions for bats, and that's what we're working on right now.
When you say cut-in speed, am I correct in saying that with the wind turbines, there is a rotation or revolution speed that the power company decide that when we need to turn it off because we're not going to generate enough power? And is it when the turbines are moving at a slower rate that the strikes happen more often? And so if they're willing to turn off those turbines sooner than later, that can help reduce some of the strikes?
Yeah, so like you just described, one of the interesting things is that the highest mortality, interestingly, occurs at lower wind speeds because bats are typically flying in lower wind speeds because if it's too energetically demanding at higher wind speeds. And so the higher wind speeds are what are really generating the wind energy. And so if we raise it up to when they kick in, then that's better for bats.
Really want to thank you today for speaking to us about bats. You know a lot about the topic. I was wondering if you could help us with our trivia question that we started out the show with. Our question dealt with the bat's role, really. How many dollars do scientists estimate that bats save farmers each year in reducing crop damage and pesticide use?
Well, it's been estimated that in the United States, bats are worth over $3.7 billion annually to the agricultural industry.
That's billion with a B.
That's billion
with a B.
Wow.
And in Idaho alone, it's estimated that they're valued at over $313 million annually to just the agricultural industry alone. And that doesn't even take into consideration their value to the forest industry, which hasn't yet been quantified scientifically.
So that basically means we have a lot to love about bats.
Oh, yeah.
Above and beyond their purring.
Definitely.
Yes.
We have
yes.
a lot to be grateful to bats for.
Excellent. And thank you so much, Rita, for joining us today and really helping us in Idaho learn a little bit more about bats.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
We want to thank you for listening, and that's The Nature of Idaho.
Shows are recorded here at the studios of KISU Pocatello. Visit us at KISU.org for questions, comments, and audio for all our programs. Our theme music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock, and please remember to get outside and enjoy the nature of Idaho.
KISU works hard to ensure the reliability of our FM signal, but occasionally, seasonal weather or equipment failures cause us to go off the air. Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org, or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.